Welcome to the Work Revolution podcast, where we believe, in fact, we know, there's a better way to work and live. And we are here to challenge the status quo of obsolete workplace practices and ideas about leadership. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Deborah. Along with you, our listeners, we're evolving our thinking about what it means to belong, innovate, and create change at work. Join us as we dispel the myths of meritocracy, hierarchy, and other bullshit practices that get in the way of all of us harnessing our full potential to make a better world. Hello and welcome back to our listeners. And hello, Lisa. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm great, Deborah. It's here in snowy Montreal, and I think you're in snowy Toronto.
We have just had a huge, huge dump of snow as we're recording this. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm all good. How about you?
I'm doing good too. And we've got an interesting topic today. In this podcast, you know, we've focused a lot on women and challenges for women in the workplace, but we talk a lot about workplaces in general as well. And what's just getting in the way of everybody contributing their best. And today we're going to focus in on men a little bit and what might be some of their unique challenges. And you've lined up a great guest interview for us to talk about. So we're going to get to that. But let's talk a little bit about why we think this is an important topic, because part of the systems and structures that we have in place, it's also putting some unique pressures on men. And, you know, there are cultural norms that we have. We tend to think of men maybe as having it easier. And maybe in some ways, you know, when we look at the numbers across leadership and the numbers in terms of representation of men and women, it seems like, wow, life must be easier for men. But there are other numbers that we can look at that might paint a little bit of a different picture. So let's just start with that. What are some of the stats that we've been looking at that have led us to believe this is also a really important lens?
Yeah. So there's a lot of data on burnout these days. And in fact, there was a piece in the New York Times right at the start of the year on the 4th of January by Jonathan, and I believe his last name is pronounced Malisik. And Jonathan, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it. And this article was really, in a way, stunning to me because it brought to life things that I never really thought about in as concrete a way as he described. So just a couple of things that he shares in the course of this article. He says that, first of all, that written accounts of male burnout are hard to find. And this might be because of the way we think about masculinity, that, you know, men are just so much stronger and that they don't have the same challenges as women. But in fact, they just are a little bit better at hiding them because of the breadwinner ethos, right? It's like, again, talking about the masculinization of what we think about as work. So he writes that men are about 40% less likely than women to seek counseling for any reason, but also for burnout. Men typically have less close friends that they share their feelings and the struggles that they have. And there's a bit of a kind of go to work and shut up about it. You know, if you're putting food on the table, then that's pretty much what's expected of you. There are higher rates of suicide for men related to work. There are higher rates of cardiac issues for men. And we typically don't give men the time and space to be more vulnerable. We do hold men to a standard of strength and of stoicism that we don't hold women to. So there are actually issues for men, working men, that I explore within this conversation with Mark McCartney.
Well, let's get to this conversation and then you and I have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited to dig into this. So let's hear what Mark has to say.
Yeah. And I'll just say that Mark's in the UK, which you'll hear from his accent, and he's a business coach and he specializes in working with men who have children. So let's give a listen to what Mark has to say. So Mark, great to have you as a guest. You and I have had a couple of conversations about work and about the meaning of work and the kind of work that you do. So tell me a little bit about how you got interested in working dads, given who you are and your professional background.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Well, great to be on the show. And thank you for having me on the show. Well, first of all, I am a dad, so I feel it on a daily basis. The struggle between balancing work and balancing home life, and the expectations have changed so much in both areas, performance at work and performance at home as a working parent. But I got interested in this when I was working with leaders, one-to-one coaching, and they would begin to talk about their identity, not only at work, but also outside work. And I think, and I'm sure we'll explore this a bit more, there's a resistance, a growing resistance to thinking about our career in terms of, does that mean sacrificing a life outside work? And I think we probably both noticed that in the next generation of leaders who I hope, and I can certainly feel, have a different set of values and are not prepared to pay the same price.
Hmm.
So it's sort of, I suppose, working mum, we have a very clear identity of what a working mum is, but I think we're in the foothills of what it means to be a working dad and what kind of expectations of work and outside work we have as a society.
Yeah, and you're making me think about my own upbringing and my father, who was born in the 30s and started his working life in the 50s and very much identified with the breadwinner identity. And I know for him and for other men that I've known, not only older men, but when either they lose their work or they retire, the sense of identity, because it hasn't been developed in terms of things outside of work, is a bit of a struggle.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's so important with what we're going through at the moment, this fluidity of identities. So my wife is the main earner, the economic provider. And I say to my kids, oh, I didn't see my dad very much when I was young. And they find that very surprising. So I'm very optimistic because of this fluidity that we're experiencing at the moment.
Well, it's clearly needed. I mean, I've done reflecting, just having starting this conversation, I'm reflecting on, this is going back quite a few years, but my parents' 40th wedding anniversary, and we were all sort of going around the table, my two brothers and myself, talking about things we remembered from our childhood. And a couple of times there were things we remember that my father wasn't even aware of. And he said, when it came to him, he said, you know, if I were to have a regret when I think about my life, it's that I wasn't there for many of the things that were important to each of you. And I think that really underscores why this important focus on fathers who also earn a living, obviously, we were talking about working dads, but are dads. So as you're working in this field, as you're talking with men, what are the key concerns or complaints that you hear from men in terms of their role as fathers and being employed?
I think the main concern, and one that's become even more of a concern during the crisis, during the pandemic, is those men that are working in overworking, fairly toxic environments where even now they're constantly managing themselves and sort of keeping home life as far away from work as possible. And this is a real challenge because it doesn't result in better performance at work, because we need both sides. I think we need both sides of life in order to do well at work. So I think that's what's causing the real pain at the moment. And probably because people are feeling understandably insecure, that this can be even more triggering. You know, I'm really worried about my job, so I need to be present. I need to be on all the Zoom calls. I need to work late at night. And sadly, even though I'm working from home, the office door might be closed quite a lot of the day. And I've done lots of webinars on this topic, and I'm still struck by the number of working mums who say, oh yeah, you know, I leave my partner, husband to work, and I take care of everything else. It's quite shocking, really, how even now the systems are quite robust, even though they are beginning to crack, that those roles are still quite embedded.
Yeah, that these ideas, these biases that we have about women and men when it comes to roles. Oh, I mean, we see it in the discrepancy of pay. We see it in, I know at the beginning of the lockdown, with many women taking on, in addition to working from home, homeschooling, lots of challenges here. So what would you say, and you can talk about this either personally or with some of the people you speak with, but what is the impact if you're talking about overworking, toxic environments? What impact does this have on health, on mental health, and outside of that?
Well, I think, as we can see, this massive move now towards people leaving their jobs and asking themselves, well, is it worth working all these hours if it means that I can't have a life outside work? So this movement towards organizations that have a purpose and a meaning beyond quarterly profits. The number of, I can think of one particular person I'm coaching at the moment who has left a large global law firm where he was just working all the time. You know, yes, he had a great salary, but he's got three kids. He never sees them. And he told me that he needs to make a change. And indeed, he has made a change. And it transforms his satisfaction at work and also satisfaction outside work as well. So I think this is the trend. It's a questioning of this kind of conventional work culture.
And would you say, Mark, that this is driven in part generationally?
There's a huge generational difference, I think. Yeah. I mean, I notice it when I'm coaching people in their 30s, those that will be taking over, there's a recognition that work and life feed each other. They're not always in conflict, that particularly because the workplace has changed so much. We are moving much more frequently between different organizations. There's a lot more fluidity. So that's another dynamic I think I'm noticing amongst those that are becoming dads. And I don't know why exactly, but I'm coaching quite a few dads that have just recently become dads. And that time they take out to really think about, well, what kind of career do I want? And what am I prepared to sacrifice for that career? And I think that has definitely changed.
Yeah, we've all been sort of in a culture that I think in which work devotion is seen as being devoted to your job is seen as a very legitimate way to live your life. And, you know, the comment I often hear when I ask people how they are, they say that they're busy, right? This can excuse anything. You know, I'm sorry, I can't because I'm busy. I'm busy. And we've allowed work to become a reason why we can't do other things in life. And so when I hear you talk about this shifting, I think that's a really important shift. And, you know, you said something earlier about, you know, men managing themselves. What I'm struck by when we talk about, you know, whether it's burnout or taking on too many responsibilities, or as you said a moment ago, working in the evening, long hours, fear of losing our jobs, often it's put on individuals, right? So, well, if you can't handle your stress, it's because you're not taking enough time for yourself, or, you know, that you should be focusing on sleeping enough and exercising. What's your response to when we put this on the workers' back or the employees' back or the working dad's back? What do you say to that?
I think it's a very good point. And we can often feel that it's us. This is why this word resilience, I'm not a great fan of it, because resilience is just sort of putting up with things in some ways and coping with it. But organizationally, particularly those cultures that I've already talked about, let's say are overworking cultures, the way to get on in that culture is to work long hours, to be seen to be taking on more and more and more and more and more. And in those kinds of cultures, it pushes many of us towards burnout and general dissatisfaction with our job. And actually, as we know, that's not a culture that can be described as a high performance culture. That is a real problem. But there are lots of great organizations out there that are really doing a lot to attract, whether it's working parents, anyone with caring responsibilities outside of work, of which there are many, of course, all of us at some point will probably have that. Those really smart organizations are really trying to create environments whereby you can work. And I guess, what do we mean by working? I'm sure you hear this all the time. People are busy, as we've said, but what are they busy doing? Often busy managing themselves or managing their reputation on Zoom calls, many of which, you know, people describe as kind of pointless, really. Email inboxes, all the kind of stuff that keeps us busy.
I'm recalling a colleague who said to me, I think this might have been early on in the pandemic, that there was some work, it was a male colleague, and there was some work event that kind of happened or something had to happen at the last minute. And my friend said, well, I'm sorry, I can't make it. I have to go home to be with my kids. And his boss, also a man, said, well, can't your wife take care of that? Mm-hmm. You know, when I reflect on that, we started this conversation talking about some traditional gender roles, but I'm curious, what would you suggest to a working dad who receives that kind of comment from somebody above them in the organization, that expectation is there, that they're
partner at home be the one that takes care of anything in the domestic sphere?
I think I could summarize it in two words: get out.
Okay.
I think if that's the kind of culture you're in, of course, that's the reality for many people. And it's not easy to change careers. But I think there's so much flux and fluidity that this is a conversation I'm often having with working dads, you know, what kind of working style do I want? What kind of culture do I want to work in? There are many organizations that are creating cultures where that conflict is not so apparent and stark. And I kind of hope, and maybe this is naive, but because this is an experience that the whole planet's been through, that experience will shift beliefs and values, even amongst those that perhaps would be most resistant. If you've been at home, doesn't matter whether you're a chief exec, you still would have been at home for some period of time. You still will see the clash between work and home life because it's there right in front of you.
Well, at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, there was much said about, because people were on video calls, that, you know, there were children and pets and, you know, strange artwork. And, you know, there was some sort of interesting aspect of getting to know people outside of work because of what we were seeing in their lives. But I think it also surfaced that, you know, we've designed much of our economic systems around the idea, and I'll go back to the traditional male who goes to work, that the only way that you can actually do all of this is if you have somebody doing all the sort of management on the side, right? That there's this mythology that we sort of enter into the workplace in a way, I don't know, pure is the right word, but that there's nothing encumbering us, and that children, pets, aging parents, leaking roofs, complicated family dynamics, that is the organization, in a way, if I were to take the voice of the organization, says, we don't care about that. We just want you to show up and be productive. Would you say, and given some of the things we've talked about and what we've seen, that, you know, and the great resignation, as we're calling it here on the other side of the pond, that this is going to shift in any kind of permanent way? Or do you think that this is more temporary, and at some point we're going to go back, or we're going to still struggle with a lot of these ideas that are, I think, are quite biased and deeply entrenched, as you said?
I think that word you use, Lisa, productive, I sometimes describe it as sort of an industrial mindset. How do we increase productivity, which seems sort of very mechanistic, really? And as we move into who knows what kind of world, but we can all experience it changing so rapidly, I would hope that those human capabilities, empathy, learning, the ability to adapt to situations, those are going to become so much more important. And if someone works in an organization which is so brittle and it's all about getting people back into the office, monitoring them, it's sort of masking something deeper, which is, what kind of purpose does that organization have? How is it creating meaning for the employees? And I think there are organizations that are responding. I mean, just to pick one at random, Deloitte and some of the big consultancies, they're having to change because they're talent intensive industries, and they really will have to provide different ways of working to get the best people, because I don't think the talented people will want to work in those kinds of organizations. There are just so many more opportunities out there.
Yeah. And I also would imagine with, you know, as we know more about climate devastation, you know, there seems to be, I mean, here in Canada, we're between fires and floods. There's a bit of an apocalyptic, you know, sensibility going on. And I'd like to end on this question. So much is going on. You know, now we've got a new variant that seems to be causing a lot of distress. We don't know a lot about it. As I just said, we have climate change, divisive politics all over the world, ongoing issues of racism and sexism, ableism. So why would it be important in all of this mix to also be having conversations about working dads? What does society gain by helping men balance their time and energy across their professional and personal lives?
I think by looking at this tiny segment of working dads, typically in more senior roles, it exposes a lot more about the whole system within which we are living and working. The Economist, a couple of years ago, they had a feature on this topic. And the first article, it stayed with me, said, "The world is still designed by men for men." And if that's the case, which to some degree it is, what does that mean for diversity and inclusion? What could it be that the number of women getting to very senior levels is in reverse at the moment? It could well be because they can't spend all of their life working and probably don't want to. So I think if you look at different stakeholders in society, if you have working dads, many of whom don't identify necessarily as working dads because it's a new idea, a new identity. But if there's not change there, I think because many of them are in very senior leadership roles running organizations, it does filter down and it does create toxic cultures that are just not fit for facing the challenges that, you know, we just talked about, all the challenges that we are all facing as a planet. So I think it's sort of maybe just a way into a broader systemic challenge.
It's one other piece of a greater whole, right? I mean, often when I've worked with organizations on change projects and, you know, people are very well-intentioned and they're like, well, here's what we need to do. And they don't see the systemic nature that if you implement this particular change, it's going to have downstream effects on something else, which creates another problem. And I think one of the things that I like about the work that you're doing and this focus is that, you know, typically men in many of the systems, whether it's in the workplace, particularly in traditional work, you know, types of trades, those types of jobs, that it's the men who need to be creating the environment that's welcoming. And here's my challenge often when I hear people want to break into professions that are more male dominated, is that it's great that, you know, maybe more, whether it's women or women of color or different types of people representing a broader diversity are challenging some of these things. But if the work environment itself, in which, you know, the strong male figure, the guy who's got all the decisions made, if that doesn't also shift, then we're just making it a lot harder to bring about the changes I think that many of us want. So, Mark, I'd like you to just bottom line for me, if you could make a bold statement about or a prediction or something that you think is really important that needs to be said in this conversation, what would you offer to our listeners?
I would say anyone listening out there who is either a working dad, working mom, wants kids, has kids, knows someone with kids, would be thinking in 2022, do I want to remain in this organization with this kind of culture? And to sit down for a few moments and to think about what is truly important and what does that mean for the kind of work I want to do? Because, I mean, you and I, I'm sure, will agree with this, that work is really, really important, provides huge purpose. But there's much better type of work out there rather than this putting in the hours, being productive. So I think what I would say is, if you're in a kind of toxic environment where you have to hide life outside work, it really is time to change. And change as quickly as you can, because there are loads of opportunities out there and organizations wanting to attract talent.
Absolutely. And people like you who are helping men have that conversation with themselves and with their families to start making those choices. Mark, let us know how people can find you and hear more about your work.
Yeah. So there was an HBR book out in June this year, which I'd recommend. It's called Advice for Working Dads. I wrote a chapter in there. So take a look at that. You can get it through Audible. Also on LinkedIn as well. So it's Mark McCartney. And do email me if that's easier. Mark with a K at tofocus.co.uk.
Mark, it's been a pleasure. You've brought my attention to something that was sort of lurking in the corners around much of the work that we do, around wanting more participation in the workplace. And I feel in the work that you're doing and the conversation that we've just had, you're shining a light on something that we don't often see as particularly obvious, but is, as I said earlier, part of a bigger puzzle. So I greatly appreciate you being able to join me today. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks so much.
So, Lisa, one of the things that really struck me about the conversation you had with Mark was when he used the term working dads. And rightly or wrongly, that term just stuck with me because it's not a term that I hear used very often, for one thing, to describe men in the workplace. but we're really used to the term working moms. And it just really struck me how differently those two terms land with me. And I know for me in my working life, I didn't really like being referred to as a working mom. Now, I don't know, rightly or wrongly, it just, for me, it seemed to denote that when being called a working mom meant somehow that you were less dedicated or serious about the working part of that, and that the bulk of my dedication and focus was going to be on the fact that I was a mom and I was fitting work into that aspect of my life. But when I hear the term working dad, it has one effect of almost leveling the playing field to say, oh, wait a minute, maybe we're just referring to people who have jobs, but also have parenting responsibilities. So I sort of like using the term working dad.
You raise an interesting thing as I was listening to you talk there. It's like, why don't we just call people with children working parents? Like, why do we have to layer on all the baggage that we have around the term mom or dad? Yeah, but go on. I'm curious to hear what else you have to say.
Exactly. I'm going to start using the term working parents. I think that makes a lot more sense because, you know, our culture is really changing around expectations at home for parents, and they're less defined by gender. We don't have the same, the rules are changing. And so therefore our workplaces really need to change as well, because, you know, and you and I have talked a lot about this before, but our current day workplaces aren't really designed. They weren't originally designed for, you know, men and women going into the workplace. And they're not really designed for knowledge workers either. We've talked a little bit about that. This idea of an 8-hour day wasn't even constructed with knowledge work in mind. And it certainly wasn't constructed with someone who goes to work all day and then comes home and has to do all the domestic labor and caregiving labor. And I think what Mark is really starting to draw attention to that I really appreciate, and I can talk a little bit about this from my personal life too, Mark is drawing attention to is saying, you know, men have caring responsibilities too. They have aging parents, they have children. And if two people are going to be in the workforce in our economy, you know, we want women participating fully in the workforce, which means that those responsibilities have to go somewhere. And so, you know, I think it's drawing an interesting focus to be taken on that. And what does that mean then for men who have grown up with different ideas about what it means to be a man in the workplace? Because I think there's a lot of pressure that men feel. And I know that if I think back to early days when my husband and I were getting married and starting a family, looking back on that, I would say, I don't think we spent a lot of time really thinking about deconstructing and discussing what our roles were going to be. I think we just made a lot of assumptions that, yes, we would both work and somehow we would figure out how we're going to take care of children and a house and all of these various things. It was going to somehow all come together. And then the reality of that over time is that we did have to make a lot of compromises. And I think I just naturally assumed that it would be me that would do a lot of the compromising career-wise. I assumed it would be me who took on additional childcare responsibilities. And this is just a lot of my biases coming into play. First of all, I felt I was just naturally going to be better at it, which didn't leave a lot of...
And, you know, maybe you are, but please go on.
But my husband's naturally better at other aspects of it, you know? So anyway, it's interesting now that my kids are getting a little older. They're getting more independence. I look back on those early days with a slightly different mindset. And I can see that the generation younger than me is coming at this with a very different mindset. And that's what I mean by workplaces really need to adjust and change and be more flexible, because, you know, that generation coming up behind you and I, especially for folks who are parents, are coming into the workforce with very different ideas about how they're going to blend work and parenting.
I just want to pick up on a couple of things you said there. One was, and we laughed a bit about it, but, you know, naturally assumed I'd be the better parent. But I know couples who they were better parents for their kids at different ages, right? So could be, you know, maybe the mom was better at the earlier stuff and the dad was better with the teenagers, but you're playing the long game when you're parenting, right? And so there are going to be years in which maybe some of the duties and the responsibilities might shift from one person to another. But I think, you know, one of the things that would be important is that, you know, you said we didn't really talk about it, that you actually explore what that looks like. Because I think it could be, if it's not surfaced and explored, it could be a source of tension in a relationship. I want to talk about a couple of things that Mark said that really stood out for me. So one of them, and you've also touched on this, is these embedded ideas of gender roles. And these kind of, I don't know, pollute our entire lives. Yes, there are differences, biological differences between men and women, and maybe as well for people who are in either the trans space or in the non-binary space, but overall, like, we are human beings who are capable of doing things. There's nothing different about my hands that means that I can't hold a drill, unless, of course, the drill is too big. And there's nothing different about a man's capability around being a nurse or caring, right? So we have these very rigid and thankfully loosening gender roles. And this happens to me when I hear the word doctor, I think of a man. Like, it is so ingrained in me, even though that's no longer true. So we're living in a world in which these roles are very deeply ingrained in how we think about a job equals a particular type of person fulfilling the job. But what you touched on also, and I remember Mark talking about this, is what this generational difference. Now, I grew up with the father as breadwinner model. My mother worked, but it was only after my brothers and I had gone through school and I was in my teens. I was the last child in the family, the baby. And it was only when I was in high school that my mother went back to work because, again, this idea was that my mother stayed at home and my father earned the money to pay for everything. However, I will say that my parents did have pretty good ways of working as a partnership, which that's not always the case. And this thing about how if you grow up, whether it's as a woman or as a man, in a traditional parenting role in which these gender stereotypes are prevalent, it actually, unless you do the work to think through them and to start dismissing them, you kind of believe in them and it takes work to reject them. And, you know, when Mark said that, you know, younger generations are calling BS on these gender roles, you know, part of me is like, oh, yeah. Right? Like, yes. Thankfully.
Yes.
And, you yeah. know, this might be a bit of a funny thing, and I've mentioned it to you before. You know, we kind of romanticize, I think, working dads, or we romanticize dads. We see a man pushing a stroller down the street and we say, oh, what a responsible, you know, thoughtful guy. We see a woman pushing a stroller down the street. I don't know that we think that. So I think these embedded ideas of gender roles are extremely prevalent in separate from the workplace, but also, you know, the way that Mark talks about this. The other thing I wanted to point out that Mark discussed, and I was really curious about this because, you know, we talk a lot about diversity and inclusion and making sure women are more represented in the workplace. Like, why focus on working dads? Like, you've had enough attention, men. You've gotten all the great promotions and jobs. You make more money, like how much money a woman makes. You have greater amount of savings in the bank. Like, why would we now pay attention to men in the workplace who happen to be fathers? And, you know, I think Mark's response was really spot on. Like, if we don't, we're just continuing with these problems that we have in terms of, like, we need allies. We need men who are willing to talk about this and to step aside and to own the fact that they don't necessarily want to work 60-hour weeks. So I think it's part of the broader conversation. And I was really glad to see him address that.
Exactly. So I'll add a couple of things to that because I'm also a mom of two boys. And so this idea of generational change is something that I think a lot about. Now, generational change is just really slow. And I think we're at a point in time where people like you and I would like to see change happen more quickly. But there are certain things that we can only change generationally. So for example, the way that we talk about domestic chores in our house, the way we deal with and distribute, it's really important to me that my sons, first of all, don't assume that moms do everything, because that's not going to be the reality of their life. If they go forward and, you know, marry women and have children, the ex, or if they don't get married, they'll need to be able to take care of themselves. And so it's just really important, I think, for their own preparedness in life and their own mental well-being, because when we go out into the world and our expectations are not met, that can create some stress and some challenges. And so I think that's a lot of what we're seeing as roles are shifting. People feel pressure related to that, or they feel judgment related to that. And I think, you know, that stoicism we talked about that men have been often brought up with, they feel a lot of judgment and pressure around it if they don't perhaps put in long hours at work, be that breadwinner that's, you know, creating a very abundant life, perhaps for their family. But that also comes at a huge cost. And the other thing that I think is really important about this is what we really want from the men in our lives is that they be healthy and whole, that they not burn out at work, that they have time for their own self-care. Taking care of yourself takes some time, and it takes having rest, downtime, time for friends and the relationships in your life. I found that one of the stats that came out of this research that you and I were doing in some of the articles was the stat around how white heterosexual men have the fewest number of friendships than any other group. I found that really sad and quite startling. And I can see that, though. Although I find it sad, I can't say I'm that surprised, because as I look around at the men I know in my life, for the men who are married or in relationships, it tends to be the woman in their life that does most of the socializing and the organizing of social outreach and events and most of the communicating and navigating some of the more difficult, nuanced situations when it comes to family, for example. And so men haven't always been raised or taught to navigate some of those. They aren't the ones to be proactive about socializing and coordinating social events and doing a lot of the communicating around these things. And these are some of the soft skill areas that we're now seeing in high demand in the workplace. We're seeing that we have a bit of a deficit of this in the workplace. We have a deficit of this in leadership, because this is where we learn to empathize with people. You know, this is where we learn to really collaborate and understand other people's points of view, deal through maybe some conflict and difficult situations in a way that is caring. And it's just so nuanced to be able, I think the pandemic has just really shown, even in family dynamics, how sometimes we're just navigating these difficult topics and situations. But what do we want to have at the end of the day is that our relationships are maintained, right? And so I think growing up, men don't have a lot of the same exposure and experience with some of these things. You know, we think of women as being more social. The girls are, you know, doing more social things with their friends, and even their activities and play activities are around that. Whereas men's activities are more action activity based, like they're playing video games or they're playing sports, but they are not really connecting in the same intimate way, perhaps, that some younger girls and women do. So I think a lot of it is, yes, generationally exposing men and getting them more practice with these things and starting to normalize some of the things that maybe we used to think of as being more gender specific, not necessarily for any good reason, as you pointed out, other than norms. And I think the other thing we want to start thinking about is, okay, so what can happen in the workplace to start normalizing this? One of the things that came up in a previous podcast I did with Jane Scholes, she's an employment lawyer and a new mom. And one of the things she talked about is how important it would be to normalize parental leave, for example, that men take compassionate leaves, men take parental leaves, because it's not all on women to do those types of activities. And the more that younger men can see leaders and other men in the workplace doing those kinds of things, the more we're going to normalize that this is something that, you know, everybody might have to do at some point in their career because they have responsibilities outside of work.
Yeah, I remember asking my mom at some point in my life how much time my dad took off after I was born. She said, none. I mean, the cute part of the story is that he showed up at the hospital with him and both my brothers all dressed in little, my brother's obviously in little suits, but all dressed in suits. And they had flowers for my mother for giving birth to their first and only daughter, it turns out. But my parents actually, when one of my nephews who became a father took 3 months of parental leave, they were kind of in shock that he would do this. So you can just see between, I'm kind of the generation between the two. But these ideas, you're right, they take a while to filter out of the culture. You know, when I think about what you just said about parental leave, that men take it, that they role model it, you know, we need policy, you know, and this would be sort of one thing I would hope for and know that people are working on this. Different countries have different ideas about what this looks like. And, you know, in Quebec, I know it's different than in Ontario. I can't tell you why, because I've never taken parental leave here or in Ontario where I used to live, but that we make policy around it, that organizations value it, that it is financed, that there is an understanding that this is an important part of people's lives. And, you know, when you talked about that idea of working moms, with the terminology that we use, there's this idea that we're less dedicated because we're a mom or a dad, but we can be dedicated to many different things in our lives, to our families, to our parents, to our children. We can be dedicated to our jobs. We can be dedicated to our volunteer capabilities. We can be dedicated to our pets. We can be dedicated to building relationships in our community. We can be dedicated to many things. So being a parent does not take away from somebody's drive or ambition or desire to make a contribution. So I think we also want to start rethinking this. And I know, and I've heard this in workplaces where people have said to me in HR roles that for somebody particularly who was a single mother was not seen as devoted to her work as somebody who either didn't have children and made different choices in their lives. So there's a lot of stuff that I think we need to keep tossing into the air and looking at on this topic. I was really grateful to know that Mark is doing this kind of work with dads, because there are not a lot of places for working fathers to turn to. And that was to me a kind of a meta significant fact about the conversation I had with him, is that he is out there having these conversations. And we need more people who are having conversations like this, who are helping shift and change and rethink what it means to be a human being in the workplace.
Absolutely. And I think that our definition of gender equality really needs to change to include the fact that men have every right to spend time with their children, be an active part of their development and upbringing. They have a lot to offer to that. And so part of gender equality isn't just about, you know, women in the workplace. It's about creating this balance, because men are also being robbed of a lot of opportunities to make their life more healthy, more fulfilling, more rewarding. So, and as I said before, we want guys to be healthy and whole. You know, nobody wants a husband, a spouse, a partner, or a father in their life who is not able to show up fully because they are being completely drained by putting all of their energy and resources into work. Now, and sometimes to our point around burnout, that work can get to a point where it's not always fulfilling and rewarding. And this is why we do see, many people will be able to relate to an example of this in their own life, perhaps, but also, you know, there are stats around this too, is often when men retire or something happens, if they lose their job later, you know, as they're maybe getting into their later years, let's say 50 or after, when their identity is so wrapped up in who they are at work and that identity of the breadwinner, and having not invested a lot of time and energy into relationships outside of work, hobbies outside of work, the kinds of things that fill us up, bring us joy outside of work, it leaves a significant hole. And it can be one that is not easily filled. And without the tools to be able to then develop those relationships and to make those changes and adjustment in your life, it can lead to depression. As you stated before, we have much higher suicide rates with men. And, you know, I think we've all got examples probably that we can think of where someone who had maybe a really great career, a man who had a great career, I'll use air quotes around great, I guess that's a, to be defined, but let's say it looked successful from the outside, are left feeling that they don't have much left at the end of it. And that we know also that that's not the thing that's, even if you've managed to accumulate, let's say, a lot of wealth during that time, a lot of financial independence, that's not the thing that's going to make you happy, because what we're learning about what brings people joy and happiness, it's not about making a lot of money. The other resource that I will mention is, in addition to the great work that Mark is doing, is Jake Sitka of Next Gen Men. I had a conversation with Jake last year in another podcast episode, and him and his organization are also having these conversations and doing some really great work to challenge some of these stereotypes and gender norms and support boys and men as we're all trying to figure out what this world 2.0, so to speak, this next version of working life blended with life is going to look like.
Yeah. And, you know, we can in some ways thank COVID. I'm not asking anyone to get on their knees here, but, you know, the disruptions that have been wrought by virtue of this pandemic to work, working remotely, changed relationships between employees and leaders, I think has opened up some space for some of these conversations and some questioning of what we've taken for granted. So you and I and this Work Revolution podcast, people like Mark and many others are helping shift the conversation. So we are thrilled that you and I are not alone in this. And anyone who wants to join the Work Revolution is absolutely invited to reach out to us. In addition, as you know, to the podcast, we have an Ask Us Anything. We're always seeking your dilemmas, your challenges, those gnarly issues at work that you might look for some guidance on that Deborah and I can support. So please reach out to us through our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com.
Thank you for listening.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and give us a review. And follow the Work Revolution podcast on Instagram for more great content and updates about our work.
In addition to two full episodes a month, we have a monthly Ask Us Anything, where we answer your questions about leadership, career maneuvering, and whatever workplace challenges you're facing. Submit your questions to our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com, where you'll find all our episodes as well as learn more about who we are.
Thanks to Bernie at Blue Eye Music for our music theme, and to the team at Podatize for production support. Until next time.